the buzzer. McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
D squared, life is good for you. Welcome to the world's greatest podcast with Greenberg and Dokic. I mean, you are in Naples putting your toes in the sand, having big influential meetings with very successful people and just making money as we speak probably. But the NCAA the other day came up with a concept of branding the Final Four in the NCAA tournament as Mask Madness. And basically, they're going to get a copyright for Mask Madness, and they're going to obviously use that throughout the tournament. To me, I have no problem with it because I think that money probably is going to be used to offset the cost of bringing these people together, all these different teams together, testing and everything else. Plus, it also is great messaging, telling people, you know what? Until we're out of this thing, put on your mask, practice social distancing, make good decisions. All right, we've got to have great discipline to move forward. What is your take on Mask Madness?
You know, I can see where maybe somebody gets a little sensitive on it, but I'm not that guy. Look, to me, like it or not, and you and I have said this on this show, people whine and moan about money. Oh, they're trying to make money. Oh, it's all about money. Well, you know what? No kidding. Why do you think business is open? To make money. Why do you think people do silly cameo videos? To make money. Why do you think the NCAA only has certain sponsors allowed on the court? Meaning you can't have your own soft drink. It's got to be covered. Money. So what? You know, these, but I get maybe some, because we're so whacked out, sensitive about every little damn thing. I don't care. I want people to be healthy. I want people to have a tournament. I want players to enjoy themselves. I want coaches to coach their brains off. I don't give a rat's ass how they brand it. I just want the games to go on, period. I got other things to worry about than whether or not the NCAA is, you know, sensitive, insensitive, blah, blah. I'm sorry. I do. And I don't care. I don't.
Well, I agree with you. I just think that, you know, they're going to generate money. That money probably is going to pay for testing. It's probably going to pay for other championships. It's going to, you know, like we had a year without an NCAA tournament.
Right. And,
you know, you've got to offset all these institutions where people, you know, say, well, you know, they're making a ton of money. I'll tell you one thing. This year, no one's making money. That's just the way it is. Yeah. People aren't making money. And if you can offset some of the cost by using that and also get some messaging out there, I don't see why it's a big deal. Like, the NCAA can't be the evil empire for every single thing that happens in the world.
It's lazy. It's easy. There's no accountability for, all right, if I'm an athletic director and all these athletic directors have marketing teams, okay? So that's an industry in itself in college sports, right? The marketing group. You see, Watch a college football game. You're going to see somebody with a camera from the school in a huddle. Watch a college basketball game. All right. Hey, Seth, guess what? There's a lot of money poured into those teams. It's easy to market when your team is 10-0. It's easy to market when money's flowing in. You know what? I always said this. Hardest part about any job is when the job, the industry that you're in, isn't going great. You want to know who's really great? The person that can figure it out. So you know what? Whatever you have to do in this current climate to market your group, to make money for your group, outside of doing something immoral, illegal, or just plain stupid, do it. There's nothing easier. Hey, Urban Meyer's coaching Ohio State. They're 12-0. Yeah, really? Everybody wants to be involved then. All right, we're in a pandemic. We don't even know if we're going to have a game tomorrow, the next day, whatever. Okay. Well, hey, Mr. AD man sitting in your perch, figure it out. Mr. Marketing, figure it out. It's the way I look at it.
If these things, like the last, what did all the players from last year say? You know what? You know, we didn't have an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. What a loss. What a absolutely tragic. These kids didn't get a chance to finish their season out, get a chance to compete for a championship. Well, the NCAA is doing everything humanly possible
right.
That becomes a reality. So if part of that is mask madness, if part of that is being in a bubble, if part of that is what all the protocols they're putting in place, so be it. Because if you don't have a tournament, you're going to have another group of kids who are going to miss out on that opportunity, which everyone says has been absolutely paralyzing to some of these players. So, like, people realized from last year that college basketball, college sport in general, is a marketing tool, not just for the university, not just for the NCAA, but for the people that play the sports.
I'll tell you right now, Kara Lawson shut her team down at Duke women's basketball. And I don't know the reasons, but I'll tell you this. If I was a player on Duke and I'm thinking back to my years in college, I'd be telling my coach, go to hell. And I'd be transferring immediately because I want to play. And frankly, I live, as I've said every show, with a Division I athlete at Harvard whose season has been shut down. And I swear to God, she would hitchhike from Indianapolis to Boston just to practice to be with her own damn team. So whatever. I'm not saying Kara's right, wrong, happy, glad, angry, or sad. But if I was on that team, my first reaction would be, hey, coach, I love you. I love Duke. Adios. Because
It's almost like Jeff Capel said the other day. He says he doesn't feel like we should be playing it. And look, I have a lot of respect for Jeff Capel and all that. But when I lose a little respect when he says, well, this quarantine has been absolutely difficult for me. You know, here I understand when people say solitary confinement. Jeff, you're not in solitary confinement, all right?
No.
Probably in a 6,000 square foot home, you know, in Pittsburgh, with great meals coming to you, your family surrounding you, you probably have the whole basement to yourself. You can probably walk outside of your house. I mean, that's not solitary confinement. And you know what? I mean, to me, it's disappointing when people sensationalize that. And I'm sure it's difficult when people can't feed their kids, when people are getting evicted, when people are waiting for a stimulus check. I mean, to me, let's put this stuff in perspective. The other thing is, I mean, it's real simple. People say, well, we should shut it down. You know, I don't feel comfortable with players playing. If you shut it down, you know what the players would be doing? They'd be playing. They'd be playing somewhere. They'd be playing in a rec center. They'd be playing in the park. They'd be playing with a workout guy. But you know what they wouldn't have? They wouldn't have the medical care. They wouldn't have the access to everything that they have right now. They wouldn't have the supervision, all right? They wouldn't have the platform that they're having to, quote, unquote, build their brand. Now, look, if it's unsafe, shut it down. I mean, if it's unsafe, like to me, the health and well-being of the players obviously is the most important thing. But let's not fool ourselves. You talk to Mick Cronin, you talk to guys in the Pac-12, they all say the same thing. Their kids couldn't come back to campus because they wouldn't have been able to do anything, but they could have stayed home because you know what they were all doing? They were all playing. They were all in the gym. They were all the workout guru. They were all in summer leagues. They were all doing things on the court. Kids want to play. That's just the way it is. And if you take that away from them, all right, now all of a sudden they are in a room. They're in a Zoom session in a class. They're in a Zoom tutoring session. All right, what's the difference between playing games and just, what, are they just going to practice? Are you going to tell them they can't play?
I'm telling you, if I'm sitting there and I'm a woman player at Duke and I'm watching North Carolina play, Notre Dame play, Louisville play, and we're sitting here. Now, I don't know the inside. I don't know the if everybody's in grave danger, then fine. You got to shut it down. But I'm just telling you, man, NBA, adios. I got to talk about the Big Ten. The Big Ten, I was listening to a couple guys on our network. Well, Iowa's a fraud. Iowa's not a fraud. Tell you what Iowa is. Iowa's Iowa. You go back the history of Iowa basketball. Haven't won a Big Ten title since 1984. People don't understand the Big Ten. They really don't. There are Izzo. All right. Izzo and Dick Bennett / Bo Ryan flipped the script on the Big Ten. If you look back at, and I know he's the greatest coach in the history of the world, Judd Heathcote, blah, 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 blah. But when Judd Heathcote, other than when he had Magic, they were Iowa. Always had players, always lost. I went back and did a little research. In 1984, starting in 84, moving forward, Judd Heathcote had Kevin Willis, Scott Skiles, Kenny Johnson, who played in the NBA for about 10 years, and Sam Vincent, who played for about 15 years. They finished 8-10. Indiana had me. We finished 13-5. Now, it's always this way in the Big Ten. Izzo flipped it. Izzo flipped with Indiana. Indiana now loses big games. Izzo wins big games. Wisconsin flipped it. Wisconsin was a non-entity. Now they win big games. Iowa has never, Seth, won big games. Alford did a great job at Iowa. You know why? Because he won two conference tournaments. Iowa hasn't won the Big Ten since 1984. So people say they're a fraud. No, the Big Ten's just different. Illinois has had stretches, but generally Illinois loses big games in the Big Ten. Minnesota always loses big games in the Big Ten. Purdue always wins Big Ten games in the Big Ten. Wisconsin now used to lose every game, non-entity. Now they win big games. Penn State Northwestern's having a nice year. Nebraska, if Fred Hoiberg is going to coach like that, Nebraska needs to go back to the Big 12. And he's going to have that team. They're not doing the Big Ten any good in football or basketball. But the people say, well, Iowa's – no, this is Iowa. This is who Iowa is historically. And Michigan State was Iowa until Izzo elevated the entire thing. It's fascinating. Indiana, the only team that's been consistent over this time is Purdue. You go through Lee Rose to Gene Cady to now Matt. They're always at the top. I'm going back to the 80s. I'm going back 30 years. So people say Iowa's Iowa. They're going to lose important games. They just do, Seth. And I know it doesn't make any sense, but they just do. It's who they are. It's their DNA in Iowa. Telling you.
Well, here's how I look at the league. And that's a great perspective because you lived it. All right. You lived it.
40 years.
And obviously you study it. My thing is the league right now, whether someone can't win a big game or can win a big game, the league's ridiculous.
It's all right.
No. I'll tell you, here's where I say it's ridiculous. It's the best coached league in the country.
Best scouted league.
It's the best scouted league in the country. It's probably the most mature league in the country that doesn't get a ton of one and done. So you have guys that are there and invested in it and understand what it takes to win, understand how to play hard, can execute stuff, understand how to compete, have a maturity about them. They've got an essence of who they are just across the league, which makes them different. The league is different. Now, even like Northwestern, I watched Northwestern again. That's a good basketball team, but it's an experienced basketball team. I look at Iowa. All right. Look at the makeup of their teams. Forget about like whether they win a big game or not.
Yeah.
Right. They've got juniors and seniors. Purdue always has juniors and seniors. Michigan State Cassius Winston is a senior, is player of the year in the league. They have juniors and seniors. The league is a league that actually has a substance that you can kind of latch onto. And I think that's one of the reasons that, quite honestly, the fan base is so incredibly intense is because people can develop a relationship with their teams. And I look at I just look across the board. I see what Richard Pitino did last night. Yeah, he took some transfers. All right. You know, the Robbins kid blocked shots and he's big, he's skilled. And the Johnson kid looks like a terrific shot maker. He took Marcus Carr, who was a transfer from Pitt, if I'm not mistaken. But they also have some freshmen in there. But they're juniors and seniors. They've got fifth-year seniors. They've got fourth-year seniors. And to me, because of that, because of the coaching, because of the venues, because of how well scouted it is, the quality of basketball far exceeds across the board this year for sure,
yeah,
any league in the country, because in a pandemic, all those things make up for good basketball. It's good basketball. Like, it's watchable. You watched last night, Minnesota. They defend, they're connected, they get good shots. Carr's terrific. Well, yeah, he's terrific. He's a grown man. Kalischer can't make a shot yet. Aaron Henry can't go by him because the guy defends so hard. I mean, their game plans defensively take away the other team's best, the best thing they do. I mean, to me, it has separated himself. So within that, though, as it's separated, You worried about Michigan State?
I'm big time worried about Michigan State, and I'll tell you why. Interesting stat from the last three games. Let me go, and then I'll get to Michigan State, okay? I thought against Illinois, and I did the game, they were too Marcus Carr handle the ball driven. Like Marcus Carr, I felt like Seth bought into his own, you know, I'm sixth best scorer in the country. Listen to this stat that Richard Pitino put out on Twitter. Last three games, Iowa lost. We had 180 passes. St. Louis win, 200 passes. Iowa win, 245 passes. You mentioned Johnson. Brandon Johnson dribbled it 9 times, 2 to break the press, and scored 26 points. Keep the ball moving. Good things happen. I swear to God. See, this is to me. This is to me where you mentioned coaching, and you're right. I'd mentioned broadcasting because I talked about it the entire game. But anyway, they listened to me, and then they adjusted is my world, you know, Seth, the way I live my life, okay?
Of course.
But anyway, he adjusted. He didn't just stick with what this is what we're doing. So next thing you know, they go from dribble, 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 dribble to Michigan State looked to me last night. There's two things that stood out for me last night. One was Michigan State, one was Maryland. Michigan State to me last night looked like a rudderless team, looked like, you know, Tom Izzo, we're going to be a player coach team. They look like they had internal issues to me. Now, I don't know. You and I have been around this long enough that I don't give a damn what a fan says or a media guy says. You and I see things differently. And I watched that team and I thought to myself, man, we talk about connected teams. That didn't seem connected. Didn't have a point guard either. You got to have a point guard when you're running Tom Izzo stuff. Get it down quick, get you into all the stuff. I thought they were pretty good early. I thought they looked disheveled. And the second thing, Maryland, let me go to Maryland for just a second. This has never been Maryland's strong suit. But I watched Maryland play Wisconsin last night. And you know what they did better than maybe anybody? Or maybe, let me put it this way. Anytime I've seen Mark Turgeon's team at Maryland, they guarded their own, Seth. Seth, they got in front and they guarded their own and nobody had to help. You know, Wisconsin likes to drive the little seam there. They like to get different guys in different spots, post up guards. Shoot, they didn't have to help in that second half. That's the best defensive performance I've seen out of Maryland. I'm not going to say ever, but as long as I can remember. And Michigan State, to me, has got a real problem because they look rudderless, Seth.
All right, I'm going to go on Michigan State first. Michigan State has no voice.
Yeah.
If you watch them, and I watched the game last night, if you watch them, they have no voice. Like their huddles, awful. You don't see anyone talking offensively, defensively, fed ball, bringing guys together. Obviously, Rocket Watts was the heir apparent. I don't think that's him. I think if they're going to have a leader, it's going to have to be Josh Langford because he's got the respect of everyone. Number two is they've got a lot of guys that are alike. And when you've got a lot of guys that are alike, it really makes it hard because every guy that's not playing sees a guy who is playing and says, well, shoot, I could do that.
Right.
But they don't have separation within their lineup. And then number three is the guy that really needed to step up and emerge. Like Aaron Henry could not get by Gabe Kalischer yesterday. I watched him the two games prior and like he's getting to the rim the two games prior and couldn't finish anything.
Now, just a quick aside, Richard Pitino told me by far Gabe Kalischer is the best defender they have. Like, yeah, not terrific. Even terrific. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, terrific. So, I mean, like, if you don't have a voice, you don't have a guy that everyone's going to rally around, you don't have separation. Like, you're almost – like, I always felt eight's the magic number. You have a point guard sub, a wing sub, and front court sub. You have eight. The starters are going to play – between 25 and 32 minutes, and the guys are going to back them up and play the rest. Everyone has a role. You develop a chemistry. You develop a flow. They have so many alike pieces that no one like. Marcus Bingham played pretty good early. All right, yesterday, the last two games, he's non-existent. Absolutely.
No.
Just not engaged. Not engaged. Malik Hall plays his tail off. Like, he's going to have to play. I mean, he just plays hard. But, you know, again, I'm not in practice every day, but that's what it seems like to me. But the league, but even with Michigan State's issues, the league is hard. And the other thing that no one's talking about is no home court. Like, you think about
right.
The league is a home court league. It's a home court league. Now, these games are, this is a game in the park, man. And what I mean by that is it's a game. Look, you got to be self-motivated. You got to get yourself through a time where you're not scoring or you're turning it over. You can't just have empty possessions because you don't have that outside stimulus to kind of get you through those rough patches. And Michigan State, they're turning the thing over. That just useless turnovers. 24. Who turns? Let me ask you this. You play Wisconsin. All right. We've all played pack line type teams. That one thing you don't do against Wisconsin, you don't do against Virginia, you don't do against – they don't turn you over.
Right.
They keep you in front. You can throw it anywhere you want, get it reversed 17 times, you just can't get it in the lane. They gave up 24 points off turnovers. Who gives up 24 points off turnovers against a pack line defense? No one. It's not like – and that's not like what Wisconsin wanted to – take those turnovers and run them into touchdowns. So, I mean, those things got to be cleaned up. But the league, to me, just the maturity of the league is just different, especially this year in a pandemic. All right. So that's one thing. We got to hit on Gonzaga just a second.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, I call it flow. That team has a basketball IQ and a feeling, and the ball moves and people move and people cut hard and guys make plays and the ball gets reversed with a purpose and people cut in relation to the basketball. And then like dudes make shots. Someone should do a tape on Corey Kispert. I know you always talk about playing off the ball, like his relocation when the ball moves or the ball goes into the post, or the ball's penetrated, and how ready he is almost ridiculous.
Seth, when I watch them, I watch a team that plays a couple things. Number one, with more talent, okay? I mean, this is a talented crew. I mean, come on. And number two, they play different. They cut, they move. Like, I'll never forget this. The Final Four in Indianapolis, I forget. Maybe it was when Duke won. I don't know. Michigan State was there. And I remember watching Michigan State going, man, every pass has a purpose. And if I make a pass over here, somebody's cutting here, you know. And that's what I see when I see Gonzaga. Seth, I don't see a team with ego, but a team that has a ton of egos. You know what I mean? Like, they all think they're really good, but they don't. Their team ego seems to be win. Let me ask you a question. This is, I'm going rubbing my bald head on this question.
It's not completely bald. It needs a little cut.
I know. I'm on vacation. Would you take Gonzaga or would you take the field for the NCAA tournament?
I take Gonzaga, and the field to me consists of Baylor right now.
That's it.
Right now. Wow. This moment in time. I just maybe throw Kansas and Villanova. It's probably three or four teams, but I look at Gonzaga and they're just different. You know, everyone says we're just different. They're just different.
They're different.
Again, I go back to the same thing. In a pandemic, maturity, yes. Toughness, yes. Shot makers, playmakers, floor gamers, yes. Well coached. Yes. Take away what you do well. Yes. I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, I think it's not fair to Baylor because we haven't seen Baylor on that stage. People forget Mark Few. He plays West Virginia. He plays Kansas. He plays Iowa. He plays Virginia. Four distinct styles of basketball he's played against to really kind of get a litmus test on where his team's at, which I think is really good. And we won't get into Virginia because Virginia, everyone thought Virginia would be just next level. Diakite and Braxton Key were really good. Braxton Key played off everything and made some open shots and rebounded the hell out of the ball. And Diakite made up for a lot of defensive mistakes. And they don't have any guy in their front court, including Jay Huff, who can block a shot every once in a while, who can do the things that Diakite does. And they got some good, young, talented players. The other thing is people are figuring out we can make Kea Clark guard. So we eliminate any of those kick-out threats. I mean, make Kea Clark score, and he can't score enough on those drives where he keeps the ball to beat us. So if they're not running mover blocker where they're getting curls and pocket passes, they get nothing easy. So I thought that was interesting, just kind of kind of big picture, but I don't think we're being fair to Baylor, because I watched Baylor the other day. I'm going to do something on it today in the studio. They defend your ass. And those guards, Flat can play, including Adam Flagler and Cryer. And then finally, Mark Vidal, you never have to run a play for the dude. He rebounds every ball out of his area. He switches on guards and keeps them in front. He blocks shots, and he challenges everyone, the whole game, to play as hard as he plays.
I'm going to go a different route with you. You ready?
All right.
You've been in college basketball for 762 years. I've been in college basketball for 695 years. Have you ever seen a year, and I'm going to go through this with you. Kentucky stinks. Louisville, not very good. Indiana, not very good. UCLA, really, nobody has an interest. We do because we like Mick, but nationally, there's no interest there. North Carolina, not very good. Duke, not very good. Michigan State, not very good. In your time in college basketball, let's go since since 90, all right? I'd even add UConn, who's okay, but, you know, not very. Have you ever seen it like this with those particular teams? Kentucky, Indiana, Louisville, North Carolina, Michigan State, Duke. We're talking about, think about this. College basketball, with all of the everybody talks about the haves and the have-nots, right? I mean, we're building these monstrous places. Look up in our rafters and there's, okay, the two teams you're talking about, we're talking about, are a little Catholic school up in the corner of northwest part of the country and a Baptist school or whatever it is down somewhere in the middle of Texas that had to survive one of the most horrifying events in our country's history with the whole David Koresh thing. It's amazing to me.
And one of the biggest scandals in the history of college basketball.
That's right. One of the biggest scandals with Dave Bliss and that. It is astounding to me when you look at the biggest picture of all in college basketball that you would take. I think I would take. I'd take Baylor, Gonzaga, and give you the field. Right?
Yeah.
And we all talk about, well, you know, the Big Five have such an advantage. I really don't think this, Seth. I don't think Baylor has any advantage other than Scott Drew's done an unbelievable job. I don't think Gonzaga has any advantage over UCLA or Arizona or freaking name a school. But they've created one. It's amazing when you look at the scope of college basketball, Seth.
Well, let me ask you this. All right, I would put Kansas in not I don't put them in the same class as Baylor and Gonzaga, but I do think that right now they have.
A yeah.
But here's the thing: what do all those teams have? Like, I'm getting tired of players thinking it's a rite of passage to get to the NBA. I'm getting tired of guys more concerned about what they're rated and what recruiting class is and all that jazz and. You know, well, you know, he's a top 50 guy. What the hell is a top 50 guy anyway? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I don't know what Kispert was coming out of high school. I don't know what Timmy was coming out of high school. I don't know what Jared Butler was coming out of high school. All that stuff. But I look at Duke's freshman, and I look at Kentucky's freshman, and I look at North Carolina's freshman backcourt, and I look at, and you know what? Here's the deal. Those guys just aren't ready to help you win.
No.
They're just not. They're just, unless you're a Zion Wayne, those guys are just not good enough, tough enough, competitive enough, resilient enough to help you win. Now, they might, hey, maybe they'll get drafted high. I don't know. I mean, you know, you look at all this, you know, this mock draft stuff, and you look at all this junk that, you know, you see, you know, in the high school ratings and stuff and this and that. And he's a McDonald's All-American. And, you know, I say it all the time. Once you step on campus, that means bull. That all that is done. Can you help a team win? Plain and simple. Are you a winning player? And especially in a pandemic, and maybe I'll accept those guys just have no idea. And they have 1 foot in. Actually, they have less than 1 foot in because – Here's the thing that goes along with it. In a pandemic, how can you coach your team hard? Can you demand of your team? You have a standard, all right? Our coach is sitting there going, oh my God, how am I going to coach this kid? Because he's going through so much, you know, they're making so many sacrifices. Life is so different. You know, how can I don't know, but I'm just saying, I wrote this the other day is in a pandemic, the standard's the standard most times. You hold your team to a certain standard. Is it harder to hold the team to that standard with what's going on in the world today? That's number one. Everything, society and a pandemic. Number two is all these high school phenoms that are not ready to play, who have one foot in, one foot out, going to be replaced by when the transfers are going to be able to transfer and be eligible immediately? Transfers where you at least you have an idea of, you know what you're getting.
I told you this. I get that everybody wants to say the transferring is so great for kids, right? I'm sure it is. My son transferring, it was great for him. But sometimes it's not. Like, Seth, I've also said this. There's a difference. Like, I get it. You look at some guys, John Wall coming out of high school. Hell, that's a legit guy. I mean, I don't need some guru to tell me this. But just because you commit to Kentucky doesn't mean you're a first pick in the draft. And I think I think this is hard. Now, I'm not a big excuse maker, particularly for players. But if I went to Kentucky now, if I was good enough to be recruited by Cal now, how's he recruiting me? He's showing me all these first-round picks, all the money they've made. I know he's big on that, and he does the best job in the country of that. I would believe that I was that next guy. Right? I would sit there and go, well, hell, I just got I got recruited based on the NBA, just like John Wall did. I must be that good. I'm telling you. I think most things, my mentality, I haven't grown as a human being since I was 18 years old. I'm still the same, you know, ridiculous thinker. So I think as a player, I swear to God, I watched those kids against Louisville. And for the first time in my life, I felt bad for Kentucky players, because they just simply aren't good enough this year. Now, next year, weight program, Cal gets after them. Absolutely. Do you know the hell you catch? Like, everybody thinks it's so great playing at a big time school. And it is. Dane Fife and I talk about this all the time, playing at Indiana, where every little white dude from South Central Indiana thought they were better than you. And, you know, you had to listen to a bunch of bullshit from little frat boys. At Kentucky, it's magnified by 100. It's the first time, Seth, I ever felt bad in my life for a Kentucky player, because I'm watching them going, they're not good enough. They don't know they're not good enough, and they're going to get crushed by all these people that, frankly, don't give a shit who's playing in those uniforms. They just want to see Kentucky win.
100%. And I think against the Louisville team that was playing a little bit of pack line, they couldn't get by, like Boston Clark couldn't get by anybody. But here's the thing about Cal. Cal don't promise him anything. He sells all that stuff.
Right.
But he don't promise him anything.
But Seth,
and the other thing is he tells him how hard it's going to be, but telling him how hard it's going to be and then having him experience it.
Yes.
Two different things.
Hey, I look back at something. A friend of mine sent me an article. I was the earliest commit to Indiana. You know what I said in the article? I said, oh, you know what? I had a 6th, 7th, and 8th grade coach that was really tough, just like Bobby Knight. So I got no – like, what? Right? Right? Like, are you crazy? So I'm with you. No, I know Cal does the best job in the world with that. But I also am a human being, and he's showing me, hey, man, look, you come here. We play you, number one. You're going to play because we play you. Number two, this is what the result of playing, but it's going to be really tough, and I'm going to be on your ass. But when you
they don't hear those last two things,
no, Seth, no. And when Cal says it, he says it great, right? He says it funny, and you're like, "Ah, oh, that's my guy, Cal," right? Until all of a sudden you show up, and it's like, Seth, swear to God, I think I've told you this. My first practice in Indiana with Coach Knight, Seth, I'm going to die. Like, not kind of die. I am going to die. I'm in the best shape of my life. I ran with the cross. I looked over at Mike Fox, the manager. Foxy, how much we got left? He sneaks a peek at his watch, right? He goes, we got 2:15 left. I go, what? Yeah, we got 2 hours, 15 minutes, 3 hour practice. Been going 45 minutes. You know?
Well, it's the Alabama story, lining up the chairs, walking back and forth in front of us, going, hey, I'm your coach, Al Lowe, my first practice ever. White uniform, white practice gear. I want you to like me, not to love me, because loving leads to blanking, and no one blanks with Alabama. About then, I had to go to the bathroom.
But I mean, I'm telling you, it's but not. But those kids don't hear that part, and then they get there, and swear to God, this is. I always said this. I bet you Cal's the best with this. Everybody always asks, what's the best thing Bob Knight ever did as a coach? I always say it's preparation. He prepared like nobody else. But I'll say the second thing. Everybody, when you played well, okay, at a Kentucky or an Indiana, you dealt with it, Virginia, is kissing your ass. Like, you walk around campus, and it's a different era, so I can't say it, but, like, people were loving you. You know, I'm ugly. Pretty girls were loving on Double D. Let's put it that way when I had a good day, all right?
You had hair back.
Huh?
You had the big flowing hair.
Yeah. So, but Knight was the only guy you'd walk in there like, you walked out of there thinking, man, I got to get so much better. Like, you know, even though you just beat whoever, I got to get so much, I got to get, and it's just harder now. And I just feel bad for those kids at Kentucky because I know, you know, the guys with the Big Blue Nation are crushing them and it's not the kid's fault. It's not.
No, and that's the issue. I just think it's going to, now that we're going to start, let's face it, college football playoffs are coming up this weekend. We're going to get into more of a routine if, you know, depending on, you know, Jay Wright caught the virus, you know, Villanova shut down for a period of time. You know, you got certain teams coming back and playing. We saw DePaul play Providence the other day. So I think it's going to be interesting next few weeks. We'll have some guests coming up with us next few weeks. Before you leave, all right, because you are the world's greatest guru at all sports, all right, college football playoffs, let me hear who's winning.
Well, I got Clemson, Alabama.
Or should I call Jimmy Cook? I mean.
Who? I got to tell you, I can go on a rant on college football and the greatness of Nick Saban. I mean, I know he wins, but my God, you got the greatest athletes in the world. You can't guard nobody, like nobody. But anyway, I'm going to say Clemson because I like that quarterback, and I think Alabama's defense is horrendous. But, man, do I like Najee Harris and Devontae Smith. I love watching those two guys play football. I don't really believe my pick of Clemson. I think, let me switch it, even though I'm talking. I go in Alabama. It's going to be like 96-95 in the final against Clemson because Bama don't guard, but they always win big games. So there you go. Who you got?
I got Alabama. I don't know Saban, but I like everything about
him. I love him.
There's an accountability. There's a preparation. There's a toughness with compassion. He doesn't lay off of giving guys second chances if he feels that's the right thing to do, and he doesn't give a crap what you think. And you say the defense, and they weren't good against Florida, but I thought that Florida quarterback's really good.
Me too.
But where they were at the start of the season defensively, and where they were until that Florida game, the end of the season, was incredible. Because they, unless the SEC wasn't that good, because they stunk that first game against the Ole Miss I watched, where they almost lost the game. And then at the end of the season, they're getting lined up. And they, yeah, I mean, that kid at Florida, he was dropping dimes. I mean,
yeah, he's great.
He's really good. So I like Saban. I mean, I don't know anything about him. I've never been to Alabama, but his presence, and look, he doesn't have to be doing this stuff. He could walk in tomorrow and go on College Game Day and make $3 million, probably. I mean, you know, but he still loves coaching, and he loves the challenge of putting together his team and having a standard and never lowering that bar and demanding everyone around him lives up to it. And the last thing he does, that dude's made a lot of millionaires, not just players. He's made a lot of millionaire coaches.
Hey, I got to rescind because you're right. I'm wrong. Saban is awesome. In fact, I love Saban. Urban Meyer told me one time, he goes, look, when we were at Bowling Green, we used to have players over and all that stuff. Urban's like, man, Saban's got this figured out. He runs it like a corporation with love. You know what I mean? Love enough to rip your ass, love enough to hug you, but there's a certain level that you, and it's not going to be, hey, everybody, we had a bad game, come to my house and we're going to sing kumbaya. And I do love the fact that Sarkisian gets a second chance. Jones got a second chance. Loxley got a second chance. All these guys, he brings them in, and I think it's pretty cool. Yep. Kiffin got a second chance. Yeah, I think it's very – never mind. I love Nick Saban. I do. I really do. He reminds me of Izzo. They both look miserable all the time.
Happily miserable. That's what I call it.
Happily miserable. Happily miserable.
Yeah, we used to be that way all the time too.
Now I'm too happy. I was dancing the other night in the club here. Let me ask you a question before we finish this. You go out and, you know, you got your daughter, your wife, stepdaughter, your son, and everybody's going to, you know, let's go, Dad. All right. So we go to this place. Now I just want to sit, have a couple fingers of whiskey, watch the action. Next thing you know, everybody's dancing. Now you're a dad, you got daughters. Everybody's dancing and your daughter's saying, Dad, come out here and dance. Now, the last thing in the world you want to do is get on a freaking dance floor in public and dance, right? Last thing.
Yeah, except the, unless it's your daughter's wedding.
Which right, you'll dance, right. Except your daughter's wedding.
When yes. You write that check, when you write that check, dance your ass off.
I'm saying, but this was it, you know, and they're like, you know, my stepdaughter, come on, Dan, you know, you got to dance.
Yeah.
You got to dance.
I bet, and I hope we have video.
I hope to God we do, because I'm owning it. I had a cigar in my mouth, giving it a little bit, you know, horrible, horrible.
You know, I, once proved once again, world's greatest podcast, you don't get that everywhere. Potential visions of Dan Dockage dancing.
Oh, my wife showed me a little video she took of my daughter and I dancing. I'll tell you one thing I did. Like Hitch told Will Smith in Hitch, said, keep it in tight. Keep it in tight. Don't be out here. Keep it in tight, baby. Thanks for listening. Go give us a rating. Tell your friends to listen. It's Dockage. It's Greenberg. It's Taylor. Let's go.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.